Hey, this is Kevin Valentine, drummer of Shadow King. You're listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey Metalheads, Scott here.
And Richie.
Welcoming you to another edition of Focus on Metal. All kinds of good stuff going on. And one of the best things going on is Richie is back in the studio again. We can do a little discussion.
Great. I love doing
Rare
this.
Rare to go, aren't you?
I love doing this.
Yeah.
The interviews are great, but I love the discussion too.
Yeah. It's definitely good whenever you can make it down. And of course, you've been busy with the interviews and stuff too.
I've done a few.
Which is good.
Yeah, you're getting hit up more than I am. We're backed up again.
Yeah, I know.
Didn't take long.
I'd rather be backed up with interviews than backed up with like opiate-induced constipation.
Yeah, but you don't want to be running an interview in June for an album that came out the first week in February.
Well, no, we're not going to do another Jerry Gaskell thing.
No.
But definitely a lot of stuff going on. And a lot of good stuff coming out.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good start to the year.
So I figure, you know, we're going to have a discussion and why not do a quick, we won't call it quick, we'll see how long it goes, but just a discussion of a lot of the recent ones that I know you've been wanting to talk about, I've been wanting to talk about. So we can dive into some really good ones that have come out
in
the last little bit. First one up with me, of course, is the new Megadeth.
Yeah, Dystopia.
Yeah.
We're both huge fans of the band, seen them lots of times live.
Yep.
Great record. Again, great record.
Yeah, but even better than expected. That, you know what I mean? Like, I like Super Collider, but I didn't like Super Collider instantly first listen, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But this first listen was fuck yeah.
I was hoping for some solidity with the lineup, and they seemed to have it, because Sean and Chris played on Endgame and 13 and Super Collider. And then Dave, of course, came back for 13. So for two records there, you had the same lineup. And, you know, both Chris and Sean left on the same day. We're not going to rehash that. It was head scratcher. And, of course,
It was the Illuminati. That's why.
That's right. And I think I got off a plane and you sent me a text message. And I was like, what the fuck? But of course, Mustaine again comes up with the goods. More aggressive than Super Collider, definitely. It's. I think a lot of people are, you know, they're saying it's their best album since Countdown to Extinction. I wouldn't go that far because I love some of their newer stuff.
Yeah, but there's a lot of classic Megadeth elements in this one.
Definitely, I think Chris Adler's drumming is amazing on it.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not a Lamb of God guy at all, but holy crap, that guy can play. But Megadeth have always had shit hot players. Like, you're not going to have any slouches playing with them. They're always going to be shit hot. And he's done it again. Like, you know Kiko more than I do.
Yeah,
I don't really know him at all.
Yeah.
Hey, all, this is Kiko Loureiro, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
He's a phenomenal player as well. Like, Mustaine, obviously, he has the ears are up and he just seems to be able to pick these guys, and they seem like, you look at the guitarists they've had, you know, they've had Al Petrelli was in for one record, he's an amazing player.
Yeah.
Marty Friedman played on it, you know, their classic, a lot of classic albums, and Chris Broderick, super player, and Kiko, another guy whose reputation is just going to go through the roof after people listen to this.
I mean, he already has, you know, South America, Central America. I mean, he's already a big name down there, but it's good now that he's really getting out there beyond everything else he's done, you know, with past bands, with solo stuff. So I'm glad people are really getting to hear what this guy can do.
I'm assuming he's a lot younger than the rest of the guys. Mid-30s, probably?
Yeah, I'd put him in there.
Yeah, and Mustaine and Nelson have been in their 50s, I'd say, at this stage. Okay, yeah, he's a shit-hot player.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I love Mustaine, because he's brutally honest, but of course, this is the best lineup the band's ever had. I'm like, oh, this is the best guitar player I've ever played with. And I'm like, Oh, come on. Like, even if he believes it, it's like, really? Again?
Yeah. Yeah.
And again and again and again. It's like, stop.
Well, on the other hand, right, I guess I'll play devil's advocate for Dave. On the other hand, if he doesn't say all that stuff, then people like shit on him for that. I mean, he's done it to himself, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
Again, he's brutally honest. Sometimes there's things when he probably shouldn't have said anything, but
well,
he did.
Early so on in his career, he basically got carted out of Belfast for saying stuff in, I think, 88. And that's where Holy Wars came from. But, you know, he's always been one of these guys that talk first and then think about what he said later.
So he's kind of, you know, he's in a corner with that. But I think the only song that I didn't like on this really was the last track, the real punky sounding track. That was the only one that it was like, and I get the fact that, you know, there's definitely some punk influence in the background and all that. And I was like, oh, that's okay. But in the first time, that's kind of what I thought was, well, that's cool. And the second time through, I'm like, no, I'm already over this song. I'm like, it's just kind of like a throwaway type of thing. And it just, to me, because all the rest of the album was just so freaking good.
Yeah.
That one really kind of set itself apart.
Yeah. I don't know. If they do what they did on Super Collider now and then he played Kingmaker, I'd be pissed.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that with, I'm assuming when they play, I think they're playing here in March.
Yeah, in March. Yeah.
I'm assuming Chris Adler is going to be playing with him.
Yeah.
I hope that Dave will play more of the tracks on the album because those two guys played on all of this.
Yeah.
And on none of the earlier stuff.
Right.
But again, it's, you know, give the crowd what they want to hear.
Yeah, that's what
it's a tough,
and you know, that's like so freaking bizarre too, that you know, and a band we'll talk about maybe next, that like they can play whatever they want and the crowd will accept it.
Mm.
And yet
maybe not in this one, but go on.
And on the other hand, unfortunately, Dave gets stuck in the same thing as Iron Maiden, where Iron Maiden put out a great release and everyone who goes to the show, they just want to hear, you know, Countdown.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's got to kind of suck that especially where they're still putting out strong material and stuff that's on par with a lot of their earlier catalog. It's got to suck for him.
I would agree with that, but you can use another example would be Motorhead. A lot of the newer Motorhead stuff. A lot of people thought was really good, and people just wanted to hear Ace of Spades and Overkill, and it's every band has that. Like, on one hand, a band will say, "At least we have those songs; they're classics."
Yeah,
and we can, you know, we got to play them. And then on the other hand, it must be like we've got all of these other songs, and nobody gives a shit. It must be frustrating.
Well, you have to wonder about one, and I always wish you could do it. Would like take a poll of people walking in the Megadeth show at House of Blues on this tour. And ask them, have they bought Dystopia? Whether they downloaded a physical copy, do they have a copy of Dystopia? And just see how many people walking in there actually have the new album.
Or what about asking them who's in the band?
Well, yeah, there's that too. But my fear is that a lot of them will say no.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, I bet you, if you ask the same crowd going into the Hammersmith, almost all of them would go look at you like, are you fucking daft? Of course I have it.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that kind of goes full circle to why these bands don't play like the new material. Cause they're probably even thinking, geez, I wonder who's bought the album yet.
I wouldn't agree with that. I don't think they'd record it if they weren't passionate about the new material.
Oh, I think they're passionate about it. I think Dave has an intense need to make new music. Yeah. And he's old school. I don't think he would feel validated as an artist unless he continued to put stuff out. Like Dave's not going to tour and be greatest hits Dave.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
This Mustaine is the reason that I love Megadeth more now than I do Metallica, because he's driven to record new albums. Like Dead Magnetic was, what, 2008?
Yeah.
So they've done Endgame. They've done four or five studio albums since then.
Yeah.
And all you hear about Metallica is, oh, we might be in the, oh, I think, I don't know, we might be, oh, yeah, we're in there. No, we're not in there. Kirk Hammett, I lost my iPhone, I had riffs on it. He's recorded 4 or 5 fucking solo albums since then. Like, to me, there's no, Megadeth or Metallica, Megadeth, by far.
Yeah.
Easy. Easy.
Well, I think Metallica is a little bit distracted with a lot of other things. And I'm sure that they've got a good chunk of management also saying,
good,
you know,
chunk of
we
money.
Think we should do this, we should do that. Oh, yeah, that's a whole other part of it. But then the other part of it is that Dave's still fucking angry.
Yeah, right? he is on this one.
He is still angry.
Yeah, political songs are still on this.
He's got a lot of shit to still say.
Yeah.
And that definitely drives a lot of his behavior too. But he's just a driven guy.
Yeah. It always amazes me though, like, all the lineup changes and the output is still so fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he does it. He's had Ellison in and out of the band. He's had numerous guitar. Like,
yeah.
Like the question I'm all.
It sounds so much better though, when Junior's in the band.
The question I always ask, you know, is who's had more members in the band, Megadeth or Metallica, Anthrax and Slayer combined? And you actually have to even think about it.
Yeah.
You know, because Megadeth have had so many.
Yeah, yeah.
And, but Mustaine done it again.
Oh, yeah.
Done it again. And in 2 years' time, he'll have another album. And if it's anything like that, I don't know how long he has left writing stuff. He's in his 50s now. But if he keeps coming up with stuff like that, it's like, holy shit. Thanks very much.
Yeah, it's good. And I think having Junior back has like kicked the spark back up again, too.
Yeah.
You know, and has brought him back into his past a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's all good. Like I said, this one here, it was instantly like, I freaking love this album.
Yeah, the guitar at the start of the first song, The Tread Is Real, I was like, oh, uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, you just knew that it was just going to be a slamming Megadeth record.
Yeah.
It's not really commercial.
Yeah.
I think Super Collider, it's more a commercial slant on it.
Yeah.
Especially on the title track, but this one is just more or less in your face.
Yeah, I mean, Megadeth is one of those bands that every album they put out, I buy.
Hmm.
And obviously over the last, you know, couple, you kind of cross your fingers a little bit and you put your money down and you just go, oh, I hope it's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
And I did that, you know, to a degree with this one too. And I was just really, really happy when I heard it. Obviously you hear a couple of advanced tracks, but when I put the album on, I was just like, God damn, this is great.
Obliteration, no one cares anymore. The messiah or mass murderer, no controlling who comes through the door. A culture made of cover-ups, will leprosy touch their flesh? For backroom meetings and rendezvous, the vultures have come home to nest. The clock runs out, the weakest link, a deadly strike, the threat is real. See the burnished images of a crestfallen nation. See violent conditions.
So, next album.
So, of course, I kind of alluded to it. You know, another band that would play whatever the hell they want off of anything in the catalog, and everyone will just sit there and genuflect the whole night, and that, of course, is Dream Theater.
Yeah, The Astonishing.
Astonished that anyone's buying it.
It's long. It's 2 hours long, and it is... How would I describe it? I put it in the Facebook post. I was like, I was lost for words.
Yeah.
It's actually got more songs on it. But I think the sound on it is, it's a lot more atmospheric. I think Jordan Rudess had a bigger hand in the writing of this. There's not as many of the musical interludes, you know, where the musicians, there is some, I'm not saying there's none.
Yeah.
A lot of it's mellow. So James LeBrie uses that end of his voice. Right. Yeah.
That's a long ass double album.
It is. Jesus. I'm even at loss for words now. It is. You're going to really, if you really, really love the band, you're going to get it.
But and there's people out there that are that devoted to the band.
They'll
get it.
They'll think that this thing is absolutely amazing. Right. And I have friends of mine that think it's a Disney soundtrack.
Yeah.
Well, and I get where they're coming from as well. Because once you put this on, it's like lush keyboards and atmospheric songs. And I get where they're coming from. It's. I'll be honest with you, I've listened to it a couple. To me, it has some great songs on it. But to listen to the whole thing, it's tough going.
Yeah. So when you had initially told me like how you were feeling about it, listening to it, all I could think back was of when we were doing the Symphony X interview and the fact that I said that what I like about Symphony X is it takes all the good parts of Dream Theater and none of the parts that make it tedious. And I thought, great, now Dream Theater has done an album that has none of the good parts of Dream Theater, just the tedious parts.
Yeah, it's too mellow for me.
Yeah. And that's what I like Dream Theater, but that's why I always fall down on that part of it. I like the more jammy stuff, and you know, when Portnoy would be driving stuff, and there would be this good interplay, and you were like, "Yeah, this is really good." And then they would hit this other thing where I'm just like, "Oh, I'm like four bars into this song, and I'm done."
I love I had it on last week, A Dramatic Turn of Events, the first album with Mangini.
Uh-huh.
I think is fantastic. And the self-titled one that came after that is fantastic. Now, Dream Theater, I don't think they've done a concept album since Scenes. I think that was in the late 90s, right? Yeah. I know they've done pieces, like 40-minute songs and all that.
But this is
a double concept album. This is like, wow. Thing is, they can do it in this day and age.
Yeah.
And I still think they're a bit mad doing it. But if any other band did it, completely bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, these guys can pull it off. And I'm actually going to see it live in April. And I'll see how long I last.
I was going to say, you're going to bring some 5-hour
energy.
No, but
I'm going to go and see what it's like. Because I'd say it's, even for those guys, it's going to be tough to pull all that off. Because there's a lot on it. There's choirs on it. There's the orchestra on it. It's a big, big body of work. And I can't help but think that they've done shows with orchestras and choirs in the past.
Sure.
Of course, they did the one in Boston on the last tour.
Yeah,
right?
That was cool, yeah.
And you have to think that things like that had a huge influence on the sound on this one. That they said, right, we've done all these shows, let's do a whole album of this stuff.
Yeah.
And they've done it. It's just, it's too much for me.
Yeah.
It really is too much. for Dream Theater do a lot, but even this is like over two hours of Dream Theater.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
You know, if you could, again, it's like Load and Reload. If you could cut it down to 50 minutes, you could probably have a great album, or 60 minutes, but, you know, there's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just, the next album, they'll probably bring out something like Train of Thought and I'll be delighted again. But, you know, every 2 years they bring out a new album, I'll say, right, some fans love this.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan. I love the ones before.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't love all their albums anyway. I love some more than others.
Sure.
But this one, I'll see what it's like live. I think they're going to be playing it soon. The first show, I think, is in England. And we'll see how that goes. But, wow, really.
Yeah.
Like in 2016 to bring out an album like that, I don't know whether it's the bravest thing to do or the maddest thing to do.
Yeah.
It's probably somewhere in the middle.
I read the article about how they created it and all that, and it's very interesting and stuff. And the whole thing when I was reading it that I was really thinking about was, what do you think's going through Mike Mangini's head?
Hmm.
Like, here he is, he ascended to the throne of Portnoy. And the guy is a friggin' phenomenal drummer. Always has been, right?
To play in that band, you have to be good.
And he's always been this, I mean, he's got finesse, but he's also, again, been a guy who can be hard, driving, and really, powerful and all that. And that first album that he did, really, he followed what Petrucci had already programmed. Like, this is what I want you to play. The second one, now he had the more input to what he was going to play and more his personality on the parts to a degree. And then this, he's kind of like, what is he thinking? Yeah, I just kind of try to put myself in his place of, I wonder what's going through Mike's mind at this point. I'm sure he loves being in the band, but he's probably thinking, oh, I hope they don't do this for the next one.
Yeah, well, he's got to play all of it live now.
Yeah. As I just think about Scott and Judas Priest, after Nostradamus.
Yeah, I'm curious because you say, when we talked about in the beginning about the Dream Theater, you know, the fans, they let them play anything.
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see how this goes over, though. This is not just anything.
No, it's not. But I think in this case, I think the people that are at that show, they've bought this album.
Yeah, but they mightn't like it.
Then they probably won't go to the show.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They've clearly said, right, this is what we're playing. Mm. Right? There's no...
No, fair dues to them. I've always said I love bands that play new material.
Right.
I'm just thinking, is this a step too far, even for a Dream Theater fan?
I think for a lot of them, probably not.
I think the only saving grace they have, I know they play long shows, but this album is 2 hours long, and you're probably going to have a break in the middle, and they mightn't even play anything else. Seriously, they might just play this whole album, and that's the show.
That's what I'm thinking that they're going to do, is just going to play that. Now, granted, Boston's going to be an oddball gig for Dream Theater.
Because they're not from here, but...
But they're formed in Berkeley.
Yeah.
You go to a Dream Theater show in Boston, and pretty much what you have is you have a ton of people from Berkeley at the show.
And me. Who doesn't play shit?
You know, and a lot of times that's what, you know, when those guys would come in and do a show in Boston, they'd go, you know, hang out at Berkeley beforehand. You know, Mangini, obviously heavily involved with Berkeley. So there's definitely that kind of that muso component at their shows in Boston. So this one might be a little bit different than, say, you know, the show that they do in Cleveland, you know, and the same thing like when Eric Johnson plays in Boston. You've got me and a bunch of other musos that are, you know, you have to catch yourself being, oh crap, I'm standing here with my arms crossed, like focused on everything his fingers are doing, kind of a thing. So it'll be a little different, but I think that the people that are at that show will still be like, this is awesome. It's Dream Theater. No matter what, it's Dream Theater.
Yeah. You know? Well, the word will soon be out whether they actually play anything else.
Yeah.
I think people who are sitting on the fence about going,
that'll
sway them.
Yeah.
Because if they play the whole album and they don't come out and play 3 or 4 other older songs, people might say, fuck it, I'm not going to go.
Yeah.
Might say, right, if they come out and play a few, maybe even a medley at the end or something like that, they might say, right, I'll sit through this 2-hour album that I kind of like, or and then I'll stay for the last couple of songs. But we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'm not a massive fan of the album. It's got some good points on it. Again, they're playing the whole thing.
Yeah.
People are either going to love it or hate it.
Right, right.
And I still don't know whether it's a brave move or a complete bonkers.
Yeah, well, we'll find out.
Yeah, I think I'll go back to my earlier albums.
Of course, you know, just one more to talk about because I'd love to just really kind of hear your opinion of it, is because you're kind of more of a recent convert to this band, which makes me very happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, is Primal Fear. You know, we had Ralph on, psyched to have Ralph on the show. You know, again, you kind of being more of a recent fan, you know, what was your take on this one?
It's good. Solid.
Yeah.
All their albums, all the newer ones that I have anyway, they're all solid records.
Yeah.
Matt Sinner is a busy guy.
Matt Sinner is a very, very busy guy. Well, Alex is too. I mean, that was when we had Alex on, that was the joke of like, you're not going to know where you are come June, you know?
Oh, yeah, you had him on for Voodoo Circle.
Yeah.
And that was
released. Matt's in that too.
Yeah, and the album Matt was on last year that I really liked was a Level 10 album. But of course, he's back now with Rule Breaker.
Uh-huh.
And the great thing is this time they're actually playing our way.
Yeah.
I think the last time they toured the States, I think the furthest north they went was, they might have gone New York and then up to Toronto or Montreal and skipped us. But this time they're playing here, I think, with, was it Rhapsody of Fire?
Yes. Rhapsody of Fire, who we've also had on.
Yeah, so...
Alex Delapoli. Yeah, hopefully
we'll go see that show. But again, just a solid album.
About this, you know, I love that you're a fan of that now, which is pretty awesome. But then even, you know, another guy that I work with, I said, you know what, I want you to listen to this band. And he'd never heard of them before. And, like, freaking loves them. Mm. Absolutely, he was just like, holy shit, this is like, where the fuck has this band been? I'm like, well, they've been around since 89.
Yeah.
You know? But it's great that, you know, you can just toss that over to somebody else and they're just like, holy crap.
Mm.
Just Primal Fear is just, they've just got that perfect formula. There's just enough AC/DC in there. There's just enough Judas Priest in there. There's like, there is something that speaks to every metalhead in their songs.
They're heavy. They have great melody.
Yeah.
And a fantastic singer.
And the guitar interplay.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Between Magnus and Alex, with Tom just holding the back end of the rhythm guitar behind him. It's fantastic. You know?
I'm planning on going to the show. I'm really looking forward to seeing them live.
Yeah.
Because I'd say that, like, playing some of that music live, you know, with a beer in your hand, fucking amazing. Seriously. Be amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, just a solid album again. The problem with them bringing it out, they brought it out in February or January.
I know.
Come July, we'll go, we'll just completely forget all about it.
Yeah.
Because they always bring out the albums too early in the year.
That's right. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's play a little selected surprise track here, and then we'll hop into feature.
No, you got more? Yeah, we're going to play the whole of the Astonishing album. We'll see you next week.
Great. That isn't going to happen. I'll get Jay to make a scrap metal version of it. It'll be done in 2 minutes. So our special track this week is a collaboration between a couple of American heavy metal legends. That would be TKO as well as The Rods. And this kind of just came out in January as a thing where they were screwing around one night. The guys from TKO were screwing around. They decided to call a couple of the guys from The Rods up and play a little bit of Motorhead. And although this was never intended to be released, they decided that it came out really good. They all liked it, and they thought, well, we put it out. We can charge some little bit of money for it on iTunes or Amazon or wherever you go and get your digital singles these days. And that money can go to the Ronnie James Dio Stand Up and Shout Cancer Fund. So an all-around cool idea, I thought anyways, that, hey, we can benefit Ronnie's fund as well as pay a little bit of an homage to the man, the myth, the legend that is Lemmy. So I've had this one kicking around for a little bit, waiting for the perfect opportunity to roll it out. And for some reason, reason, this week seems like the perfect opportunity to roll it out. So here you go. This is Ace of Spades featuring the members of TKO as well as former Focus on Metal guest Carl Kennedy on the drums. So, of course, main feature this week is another Richie production, and that is Kevin Valentine,
yeah.
which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it was also a nice one to kick back and just listen, and I thought you did a great job with it.
Well, he's on for one album that's 25 years old this year, and that's the Shadow King record. Now, when that came out in 91, there weren't all these super groups that you get now, especially with Frontiers getting all these guys to do all these projects.
Yeah.
So in 91, I think you would have had Damn Yankees, you would have had Bad English, and this band, I'd say. And even, I think, even when you look at this band, they're all stellar musicians, but I think the two standout guys in the band were probably, that people knew were Vivian and Lou.
Yeah.
But Kevin and Bruce are tremendous players.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Turgeon has a history with Lou, I think, in Black Sheep. So the two of them know each other way, way back anyway.
Yeah.
And that album came out in 91. They only ever did one show, which I actually asked Kevin about. Because I was pretty... They played it in London. They had... The guy in the... I think they owned the Astoria in London. He had this American Dream series. And he was bringing over all these American bands. I've often said to you over you know, since I did the show, none of these fucking American bands had ever come over, right?
Yeah.
So he decided to do something about it. And I know one of the other bands he brought over was Badlands around the same time. So he'd bring them over for a one-off show. Now, you can imagine how much that cost.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because bands nowadays, you know, they won't go anywhere unless they're playing like multiple shows or anything like that, especially going from the US to Europe.
Yeah.
But they only ever did the one show, and that was it.
Wow.
And I was bummed. I was like, because the album came out, I think it got 4Ks in Kerrang out of 5. It's heavier than Foreigner. It is amazing playing from Vivian Campbell on it. And the tracks are just solid.
Mm-hmm.
And it really didn't go anywhere. And I think 91, I think, just as grunge, I think, was breaking. So I don't think you can actually say that grunge didn't make it happen.
Yeah.
It just didn't pan out. And I always wanted to talk to someone in the band about it, you know. And of course, Kevin gave some really good insight into it. And fantastic record. I think there's certain albums that come out for some of these super groups, and they're worth a revisit, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
You know, the Damn Yankees album is pretty good. I think the second Bad English album, Backlash, is worth a revisit again. You know, I think at that time, a lot of the supergroups got together and they did tour and they did do multiple albums.
Yeah.
And whereas nowadays, some of them get together and they do the album. They don't even record in the same studio.
Yeah.
We had Sean McNabb on. We actually heard the record before he did, and he played on all of it. You know, that had never happened back then. Back then, there was record companies were throwing money at these guys. These guys were name guys.
Yeah. But it was back then, too, it was harder to record at home.
Yeah.
You know, you just didn't have that technology. And even using some of the computer technology back then, trust me, it sucked. You know, you'd be working up a song and you think, and this is great. And you go to mix it and literally your computer does not have enough horsepower to mix all the tracks down. So you've recorded everything, because I've recorded songs where I've got, you know, 8 or 10 tracks of stuff. I can't mix it down because that back then the computer just didn't have the horsepower.
Yeah. I think the other problem with these supergroups is they didn't grow up together. Whereas a lot of the bands, like they started off jamming and then they went to the clubs and then, you know, if success happened, great. If it didn't happen, great. Some of these bands were like, right, I'm taking you and I know someone, I'll take him over there. And their A&R guy really puts the band together and puts them all in a room and hopes it works.
Yeah.
And then people will buy it based on the names that are on it.
Yeah.
Back then, great musicians and all that. It just didn't stick. And I always wanted to find out, you know, why. And I asked Kevin, was he bummed about it? And he was hoping the album would do a lot better. They had shows more or less booked. He'll tell you the band that got the gig instead of them, which we've all heard of. And then, of course, I think Lou literally went back to Foreigner after that. Vivian joined Def Leppard, who he's still with. Kevin went, of course, said he went to Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
And Bruce went to Foreigner as well with Lou on the Mr. Moonlight album, which is another great record. But, you know, didn't happen.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to speak to Kevin about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've never had him on the show before.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get asked about this album a lot.
Well, I think, too, this is just like a really cool, just like off-topic kind of thing. Like, you know, there's definitely other you know, shows out there that do things like this where it's like, wow, like, I'd like to hear from that guy.
Hmm.
And you're not promoting anything. It's nothing like that. And it's just some guy that, you know, has had a great career and a lot of people have heard of, and there's a lot of people who haven't. And it's just like, wow, that's just a cool interview to hear. You get a different point of view. And again, there's no promoting. There's no new album. There's nothing else. It's just, here's this really cool interview out of left field.
Well, I think he wanted to come on
because
it was the Shadow King record.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to go talk about Kiss.
Yeah.
Now, we talked a little bit about
Kiss
and a little bit about Cinderella in the end. But the point of the interview wasn't to talk about Kiss and Cinderella, because he gets asked a lot about that.
Yeah.
And it was just the Shadow King record.
Yeah.
So we went from formation of the band, recording the album, doing the show, and the demise of the band. Yeah. We went through it all.
Yeah.
And, you know, great interview. Nice guy. And a shit hot drummer.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you're going to be asked to play on Kiss albums, and, you know, you have to have your chops about you, you know.
Well, you didn't have to worry about it, because no one was going to know it was you.
The Kiss fans will know. Come on.
Well, they know
The Decibel Geek guys will know.
They know now. But I don't think he started even talking about that at all until, like, what, 2012 or something? Something like that. It's only been, very recently that he's been like, yeah, it was me.
Well, that I didn't know, because I think he said he played on one track on Hot in the Shade. But Hot in the Shade was all demos.
Yeah.
And he played on, I think, You Love Me to Hate You, I think it's him. I think he played on Take It Off, on Revenge. And then he played on 9 songs on Psycho Circus.
Yeah, and that was always the big, you know, when Psycho Circus came out, that was the big, like, was it them? Was it, you know, who really played on it? And nobody was ever saying anything for the longest freaking time.
Yeah, but all you got to do is get the Kiss box set, and it goes through. There's one song on it, I think, that Paul is the only guy who plays on it.
Yeah.
And it's Kiss, but I think it's got him and John Beauvoir and Anton Fig and Bob Kulick.
Yeah,
and it's a Kiss song.
Yeah, so it's all the bunch of New York guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So, where are we going here now?
Nowhere. We're just getting ready to run your fantastic interview you did with Kevin.
All right.
So let's do that.
Okay.
There is another
Kevin?
Yes.
How you doing? Richie here from Focus on Metal. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm great. You're obviously on the West Coast.
I am indeed.
Is it warm there?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
We're having a heat wave. I think it was 90 today.
Oh, wow. Where are you?
In Santa Monica. It's normally not this warm, but we're having a bit of a... it's a Santa Ana sort of desert winds reverse. And we don't get ocean breeze, we get desert winds. So it warms up to about 90 today.
Okay, well, we're just outside of Boston. That's about 10 degrees.
Yeah, you guys are getting pelted with snow, right?
And it's a yearly event at this stage.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah, weather's messed up, man.
Yeah, I know.
More extremes everywhere.
Yeah, so, of course... I have you on because I want to talk to you a lot about the Shadow King record, which is 25 years old this year, if you can believe that.
Oh, I can't.
So, do you get asked a lot about that album?
Actually, no. No. I think there was... It kind of came and went. There wasn't a whole lot of notice.
Yeah.
When you have all the Lou Thorner songs and his Midnight Blues songs, which are all very popular, this one didn't make too much noise, you know, so it's, no, I don't.
Okay, so do you remember what you were doing just before that project formed?
Yes, let me think here. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I'll have to back up. Normally I'm in bands for quite a while, you know, I'm in for the long run, but there was a stretch right here where I was with three people and for a short period of time, and it just happened, and I didn't like the way it happened, but it was kind of an opportunity that I just took advantage of. I was playing before this. I was playing with Peter Frampton.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine was. I got a call from him about coming down to play bass. And I think when he was on the phone, I said, "You know, who's playing drums?" And he asked them. And he said, "Well, they're just going to jam to a drum machine." And I said, "Well, tell them I'll come down and just play with you guys so, you know, you could test each other out a bit and see if you like it." So my friend didn't, Todd Jensen, he didn't play bass, but I ended up playing drums with him, you know, by accident.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to put together a band together with some younger people, a la, like, Damn Yankees. So we were doing that for a while, looking for players, and then I got the call about Lou Graham from Lou's, at that time, manager, who I had met probably 2 years before that. And, you know, Lou was, and he, to me, he's he's the king voice.
Yeah.
You know, I used to play those songs in cover bands in Cleveland.
Hmm.
He's just amazing.
Yeah.
So I did the audition with a lot of other people and never expected to get a call back because, you know, there were some, you know, Tony Bott from the Babies, I think, was one of the players. There was a lot of people auditioning. So, yeah, I won the lotto, you know, I was with the band.
Yeah, so do you have any, did you know Lou or did you know Bruce or Vivian at all before the band formed?
No, no one.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Except for Bruce, knowing of them, but no. I was kind of the newbie in the band.
So...
You know?
So who was in the band when you joined? Lou and Bruce, obviously. Was Vivian a part of the band when you joined?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, he was definitely part of the band.
Okay. So when the songs were probably mostly written at that stage, what sort of stamp did you put on the tracks?
Well, we did one song, as you probably know, for the Highlander 2 movie.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, One Dream, I think it was.
You're correct.
Yeah. And I think I contributed that to that song, unfortunately, more than the record, because the talk, I think, between Lou and Bruce were to have like a free, you know, a thing. And when we did the soundtrack song, it was more like that. You know, it was just like we, here's a song, and, you know, everyone throw their stuff in and their input, and we cut the track, and it was done, and it was all good. And then when we got to recording the record, we, I think we chased more of the demo stuff that Lou and Bruce had done. So I'd have to say, unfortunately, I think during the record, I think it was less input, certainly by me, because I was pretty much covering the parts that were on the demo.
Okay.
You know, not that that's a bad thing, but as far as, like, you know, what that I put into it, that's what I put into it. Obviously, I played them, but it was... yeah, that's what I did.
Yeah.
I was an honor to do it, and, you know, it was just great stuff.
Yeah, I want to ask you, Kevin, the Highlander soundtrack song you did was under the Lou Graham Band. So that is Shadow King that actually played on that song.
Yeah, that was Bruce and I in Rivian.
Okay. And then it morphed into a band with a band name. So where did the band name come from?
I believe it was Bruce or Lou. They were, you know, we were going over names, the same that name. And, I don't think it was from Viv or myself. I know it wasn't me. And I guess it was one of the many names. It's so hard to pick a band name.
Yeah.
You know, you pick a name and it's already used, so he can't use it. Or, you know, you pick a name and it's hard to foresee what the band will turn into and if the name will fit. But, you know, there's so many horrible names that could bring Led Zeppelin. I mean, that would...
Def Leppard.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a great name, but, you know, you turned it into a great name. You know, you turned it into a household name. So, yeah, I think it was, I think it might have been Bruce.
Okay. And what are your memories of recording the record with Keith Olsen?
Again, you know, I was the kind of newbie, so I just did what I did. I played you know, I was basically involved in the rhythm tracks. Lou would do like a pilot vocal, or more of a finished vocal. I mean, one time he went out there to get a vibe, on the song. And I think he was just like singing the telephone book, you know, because he hadn't written lyrics, and it was unbelievably good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was saying gibberish.
Yeah, well, I think
he was just singing gibberish.
Yeah, when you come to vocalists in that genre, he's up there. He's an amazing singer.
Yeah, I mean, his voice is like a martial anthem.
Yeah.
So I and then you know, much of the finishing touches and the vocals and all that I wasn't too involved with. It was mostly Bruce and Lou and Keith Olsen and the engineer.
Yeah. Now, we've had Keith on the show, and I think I remember him saying to me that the vocal track on Russia is a guide vocal.
you know what? I think that's my favorite song on the record.
Yeah.
And I'm not playing on it.
Yeah, it's the only track that Vivian actually wrote on. The rest of them are all written by Bruce and Lou.
Yeah. Yeah, that song was really something special.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. And yeah, no drums. maybe that was the mistake. They had me play drums on this stuff. That song, no drums, and it was golden.
Yeah, I think even the sound of the record, I had it on today, and I think sonically the album still sounds fantastic. Whatever way Keith and Shea Baby, I think, engineered it, whatever way they did a fantastic job on it sonically.
Yeah, Shea Baby, that's funny. You know, I noticed that Keith Olsen does records. I've noticed this, and it's a wise thing to do. He doesn't get too trendy with the sound at the time, right? Mm-hmm. So it might not be, you know, what the new piece of gear is or what have you. But since he doesn't do it a super trendy sound for the time, the song is it goes over decades because it fits into multiple decades because it doesn't sound like a synthesizer 80s song. It doesn't sound like, you know, a something 70s song. So I think it's a wise move if you hear some of his stuff. I think it was a good idea to not put too much of a sonic time stamp on it.
Yeah.
Because some songs, you know, you hear them and you go, oh my God, that's, you know, that was right, you know, in the 80s when this came out. And he didn't do that, which I think is a wise thing.
Yeah. Do you remember Lou at all having maybe a bit of a chip on his shoulder recording that album, that he felt that like he had something to prove because he wasn't with Mick Jones anymore?
I never heard anything, no.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm often just curious when, you know, guys leave bands that they're closely associated with, that the record they do after that, sometimes they can be really, really motivated to break a masterpiece if they can.
Sure, yeah. And to tell you the truth, I'm not even sure of the details of why he and Mick Jones split up.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, that's a good thing that he wasn't just, you know, spouting off with all kinds of stories, you know, without, yeah, I think that was a good thing.
Yeah. Now, when the album came out, I remember getting pretty positive reviews. But I don't know whether you've read Lou's autobiography at all.
I have not.
Okay, he's got like half a page about the Shadow King record. Now, I just want to read you a couple of lines of what he said. He said, Keith Olsen was going through a messy divorce when he was helping us produce the Shadow King album, and the results showed in our finished, or should I say, unfinished product. Would you agree with that?
Interesting comment.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, I would stop in occasionally, I wasn't there, you know, I wasn't one of the people there the whole time. So if they experienced any problems with Keith, side effects of his divorce, I don't think I saw them, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. But he didn't say any more than any other details than that?
That's more or less it. He just talked about doing the record, and there's only like two or three paragraphs in his whole book on it.
Yeah.
So, was the album done quickly? Maybe that's what he's talking to, that they had to write the songs pretty quickly and get them done?
No, I think the songs are pretty much written beforehand, and it seemed normal for maybe Lou not to have lyrics, you know, as songwriters do. I know that, you know, you heard stories about Steven Tyler, you know, being in the studio and not having lyrics and getting kicked out.
Yeah.
You know, having to go write some fucking lyrics and come back here. And so I didn't find it. I heard nothing that anyone was unpleased.
Okay. Did you track any of those live, the four of you, or were all the parts done separate?
No. Well, no. No. On, see, that's, you know, the Highlander track was tracked live. That was the four of us. But, you know, I know that a lot of Vivian's guitar was redone or played by Bruce. So I wasn't there, but I know that that happened. So, no, they were more pieced together. And I think it was more to get the sound of the demo. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whose direction that was, if it was Bruce and Lou and or Keith. I would say less so on Keith. I think Keith would just want to keep, you know, Lou and Bruce happy. So maybe he went along with that as well. But no, you know, we ended up doing like drums, keeping drums and bass.
Okay.
So I know Vivian wasn't happy about that.
Okay. So, of course, you only ever did one show. And if memory serves, it was the American Dream series of shows they had in London. I think it was mm-hmm. in the Astoria. Now, when you rehearsed for that show, did you only do tracks from Shadow King, or did you actually do any Foreigner stuff?
I think we did, I know we did Dirty White Boy.
Okay.
Now, if we did another song, I can't recall, but I was just so, you know, I was a gigantic fan.
Hmm.
You know, and to play Dirty White Boy with Lou was, it was a thrill. That's the only one I remember. Although I think I have I might have the set list at home somewhere. Yeah, it was one gig. It was just kind of sad.
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't get a tour. I remember talking to Will Sharp, the manager, and we were going to open for before Rush. And then this little known band called Soundgarden. And we were saying, I said, well, fuck Soundgarden. I mean, this is fucking Lou Graham here. I mean, and as it turns out, you know, Chris Cornell is, you know, kind of the next generation Lou Graham in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was kind of frustrating, you know?
So you actually did more, like, I think one of the rumors out there over the years is that you did the one show and split up. So there was actually talk of you going out and touring the record properly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know where the one-off gig came into play, but yeah, there was, you know, let's get on the road and play.
Yeah.
And you know, it was, I'm sure there was typical dissatisfaction with the music label. But I think unless things are going swimmingly, I think there's always dissatisfaction, you know, because it's business and, you know, they don't necessarily do exactly what you want or what you think you you should get. So, yeah, it was unfortunate, you know, not to play more.
Yeah, so I'm trying to put it in my head when Vivian left for Def Leppard. Mm-hmm. Was the band already done, or did you guys try and get someone else in to replace him?
No, you know, I can't recall either, but I think my leaving to do the Cinderella thing and Vivian's leaving to go with Def Leppard was fairly close together.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not, when I was in the band, look for another guitar player.
Okay.
We were just kind of stuck in the mud. It was just a big drag, you know?
Yes.
I mean, we and no money was coming in really to speak of.
Yeah.
The band kind of went away. Vivian obviously did quite well.
Yeah, do you keep in touch with any of the guys in the band at all?
No, I don't. I've actually run into Vivian a few times. Actually, around the corner from my house, he's at a Starbucks and going to a soccer match. And I've seen Viv play with on tour with Def Leppard a couple times.
Yeah.
He was on the road with my old buddy, Brian Adams, one time and another time. I can't remember where it was. But no, I mean, everyone kind of goes their way, you know?
Yeah. We might.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's a chance I might be talking to Vivian next week. So I'll say hello for you.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, and I know that, you know, when bands split up, it's kind of like, splitting up your girlfriend or something. I mean, it's understandable, but there's always kind of hard feelings, somewhat, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
With Vivian, if you're joining Def Leppard, I think they might understand that more than me leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But, I just thought that Cinderella was just a better thing career-wise, certainly money-wise.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, when are we talking, 92? So is that Heartbreak Station around that time?
It was right after that.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, the audition I did, I played one of the songs from that record.
Okay.
I just heard a song on The More Things Change, The More They Stay The Same. I just heard that on Sirius. It's a really good song.
It is. Tom Kiefer is talented.
Yeah, he is. They have strange ways of doing things too.
Okay.
Having three people to play in the record was ridiculous. But, I've heard it in the past, and they recreated it with me, and things happen.
Yeah. So is this the Still Climbing album you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I played on it. This and that played on it, and then Arnoff played on it a few times.
That's right. Kenny's name is on the credits for that.
And I heard through a bass player friend of mine that when Bissonette got the rough tracks that I was on, he I'm trying to think who he asked. He said, "This stuff sounds fine. What do these guys want?" And then when Arnoff got the stuff from Bissonette, he said the same thing. "This sounds fine. What do these guys want?" But Tom is very particular with drummers. Unfortunately, I think get a little out there, and but that's another thing entirely.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Kevin, I just want to ask you. We're doing a project on Little Mountain Sound Studios in Vancouver, and of course, one of the big guys there, of course, who's passed away. Like, we've spoken to everyone else there, Bob Rock. We've spoken to Mike Fraser. You did an album in, I believe, in the Armory, the Psycho Circus record. What are your memories of working with Bruce?
He was a very mellow guy. You know, he was just, you know, unlike Andy Johns, who, you know, was a maniac, you know, drinking a fifth of whiskey at you know, rehearsal. He was, yeah, and then going out to dinner and have, like, you know, four doubles after that. He was, you know, the opposite side of the spectrum from that. He was just a mellow guy, very calm, very smooth operator. And I didn't, I mean, doing tracks was, you know, it was very easy with Kiss. You know, Bruce was pretty much on board with Gene and Paul. When I worked with Ezrin too, who I really, really admire, and I think he was more demanding. But no, it was a very smooth session. At that point, I had already I was phasing out of playing full time, and I was into engineering TV shows, which is what I'm doing today, mixing TV shows.
Okay.
And when I got the call, I said to my wife, Gene just called, and, you know, he wants to know if I want to play on this record. And I said, you know, I have to start. I was on at the time, I just had started in the TV, and I was like an assistant recordist, and I had to go to work or start my day at 4 o'clock. And I said, you know, I'm going to have to tell them that I could cut tracks from 9 till 3. I said, they're never going to go for that. And so when I talked to Gene, I said, listen, you know, Gene, I got to get out by 3 because I got to go do this thing. He said, well, I don't want you to compromise that. I said, I could cut tracks from, you know, 9 to 3. He said, fine. And I think we ended up doing like 10 to 4, and we would cut tracks with the band. And then when I would leave, they would do overdubs. So it worked out perfectly.
Okay. I'd say the Kiss stuff you must get asked a lot about, Kevin.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Well, they're so friggin' universal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Their appeal goes, it's so deep. I mean, you know, because it's the music, it's the makeup, it's the cartoons. It's those people are crazy, the Kiss fans.
Yeah, the Kiss Army.
Yeah, yeah. We opened up for them in a band called Breathless in, let's see, 79. And it was a real eye-opening experience, if you could imagine. It was the first time I played the Forum here in L.A.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. We had a percussion player, right? He had a gong. And we would enter on his side of the stage. And as soon as the house lights would go down, you would hear the audience going, Kiss, 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 Kiss. And I would bang on the gong just to, you know, quiet the people down until we got behind their gear and started playing. But there's no doing battle with Kiss.
Yeah.
You can't win that.
Yeah. So,
not that you would want to.
Yeah. So do you play drums much anymore, Kevin? Or do you do the TV stuff?
Playing, what happened was, and I had my second child, I ran sound for Kiss on that convention tour they did. It was called something else, where they brought out all the gear and the Love Gun painting and Peter's drums, and they did question and answer. And I don't know what it was called, what the tour was, but I was running sound for them. And when I came back, I just had my daughter. She was about 3 weeks old, and when I came back, I said, I just got to find something else. So that's when I started going, you know, into working in the TV and movies, engineering, because I always engineered, you know, music sessions. That kind of takes you out of doing anything serious, because if you were to get in a quote-unquote serious band, they're not going to want you to just play on weekends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I'm going back to I continue to go back to Pennsylvania and Ohio to play with a band from the 80s called Donny Iris.
Okay.
I played with them 80 to 85. I think I moved to California in 87. And we had like three songs in the Billboard top 40, top 30. And they could never find a drummer that would fit the band. So I flew in for a reunion show one time and they said, well, why don't you come back and play the gig? So I just fly there and I play. And it's actually quite a bit of fun because, you know, there's no career. And no one's worried about chart action. And everyone has real life jobs, fairly high end jobs. So it's fun, and you know, no one's got drug habits, and we go together. We go there, and we play, and we have some breakfast, and we go on our way. So it's actually quite a bit of fun.
Yeah, and just a final question. I'm terrible at this. Final question for me, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Injuries. Have you ever had any injuries from playing drums?
No.
Okay.
No. It's probably the healthiest I've ever been playing drums. Yeah. Because obviously you could do damage to your hands if you're playing incorrectly or playing too hard. Or I did have a pretty good case of tennis elbow. My left and my right arm from just hyperextending it, which is also something you do while you're playing drums. But no. I remember, I knew that Peter Criss was having horrible problems with his wrist when he got back in the band. I mean, I think Paul was telling me that he would have to, soak his wrists in ice water after the show and all that. And no.
You've been lucky.
Yeah, I guess I have, yeah. But, it also depends how you play.
Yeah.
If you, I hate to use the word properly, but if you play properly, using the hand properly, which goes back to drum lessons. So I guess all those drum lessons paid off. You use the hand properly and use the action for what it does. And it saves wear and tear on your hands.
Okay.
No, but I wonder about that sometimes. I'll turn on a concert, if Kiss is on or something, and I'll think Eric's playing like all the time. And I wonder, what it's like for him,
Yeah.
Eric and I are school buddies from Cleveland.
Oh, nice.
Eric Singer.
Nice.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal drummer.
Yeah. Two drummers from Euclid, Ohio were played in Kiss.
You should have gone to Vegas years ago and put money on that, Kevin.
I mean, you couldn't plan that if you wanted to.
No. Speaking of injuries, like we've had Carmine Appice on the show, and he said he's had numerous injuries, but he's a powerful drummer.
Yeah, he is. Carmine's fucking great.
Yeah.
Oh, God, he's really great. I mean, he's just, when he plays, it's just so powerful and commanding. I mean, he's playing. He's a really great drummer.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal drummer.
Yeah.
I have to say, this has been a blast. I'm really glad that nobody asked you about the album very much, because I was hoping you'd say that, because we could actually delve into it a little bit. I've lived with this album for 25 years. I still think it's an amazing piece of work.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad some people liked it.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So we'll leave you go, Kevin, and have a good rest of the night and enjoy the hot weather.
Yeah. Thanks for talking.
All right. No problem, Kevin. All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, there you go. Your interview with Kevin Valentine, and again, great job, Richie. Just pulling these guys out of thin air.
You know, drummers are good talkers
most of the time.
You hope,
except you got to pull the stuff out of Carmine every time we talk.
Yeah, Jimmy DeGrasso was fantastic.
Oh, Jimmy's always freaking great.
Yeah,
Jimmy's great. You'd have Jimmy on once a month.
It's like
we'd find shit to talk about.
Jimmy, why do you want me on? And then you ask the next question half an hour later and you go, that's why.
Yeah, no, Jimmy's always fucking fantastic. Anytime we can have Jimmy on, that's a good night.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, I think we've got a few more drummers coming up and, never been on the show before, so we'll see how it goes.
Cool.
And, yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that is a wrap for this week. So, as usual, keep up with us on focusonmetal.net. Focusonmetal.blogspot.com. You always can hit up Richie on Facebook. You've had some pretty provocative and comments on there lately. Good comments back, which is good. I don't mind.
As long as guys have a look at it and comment, yeah. I don't care one way or the other if they think it, I'm talking a load of shite or not. Doesn't bother me at all.
No, you seem to get good feedback on what you're putting up there and stuff. So obviously you guys want to talk to Richie. Facebook is the place. And, you know, always keep up with us on Twitter as well. And as Richie joked about earlier in the show, definitely we have a lot of stuff. We've still, even with what we've got right now, we're still doing another 2 to 3 interviews every single week, booked right through March. So lots of good stuff. And we still have Little Mountain.
Yeah, I haven't even started the next project yet. I don't even think I might even skip it for a while because there's no point getting backed up. No, yeah. That's assuming people will say yes. That's the problem. But I think at this stage we'll just let Little Mountain run.
Yep.
And maybe when we do the next project, I'll try and not, you know, book them all 1 week after the other, and maybe do one and run it and do one and run it.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that way.
Then, but you know, if we go with the next one, which is an awesome idea, I think that there won't be as many.
No.
You know what I mean?
No, I think a lot
Strange
of the stories
Highways was very broad.
I think a lot of the stories for the next one, if it happens, will be very similar.
Yeah.
So we'll see if I can pull it off.
All right, cool. All right, so that's a wrap for this week. Hope you guys enjoyed that show. And we will be back again next week. So for myself, Richie, everyone else here at Focus on Metal, have yourself a great metal week. And until we talk to you again next time, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.